In Matthew 6:21, Jesus says, "For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also."
Hi, I'm Rob West.
That teaching is true for everyone, and yet men and women have different perspectives on money. So how do wise women manage the resources God entrusts to them? Miriam Neff is here to talk about that today, and then it's on to your calls at 800-525-7000. That's 800-525-7000. This is Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. Biblical wisdom for your financial decisions. Well, it's indeed a pleasure to have Miriam Neff back on the program. She's the founder and president of Widow Connection, a ministry dedicated to helping women overcome and thrive after the loss of a husband. She's also co-author with her daughter, Valerie Neff Hogan, of Wise Women Managing Money. Miriam, a delight to have you with us today.
It's good to be with you, Rob. What you're doing is so important. First of all, it's biblical wisdom, so it's sound. But the other thing is having the Q&A, people get to call in and address specific things. I mean, not only is it priceless, you pay big bucks to get this kind of really expert advice.
Well, thank you. You're one of our biggest fans, and we're grateful because we think so highly of you and Valerie and the work you're doing at Widow Connection. So I always look forward to having you on the program. You know, Miriam, your book is a great resource for women in general, but especially for those who may suddenly find themselves having to manage the household finances. And you've identified 8 habits of wise women who've been thrust into that role. Now, these are habits that anyone can establish if they're willing to put in the time, right?
Oh, that's right. And just a little statistics. Most women in the United States are single. There are also a lot of single moms, widows, but every woman should know and understand finances. We oversee 51% of the wealth in the United States now, and that is growing. And we're talking about women here. So we are capable for sure because God has created us. Whether he's entrusted us with a large amount or small, he has entrusted us, which means he's going to help us.
Yes.
The key, and it's most important, know your why, because it's all God's.
I love that. Know your why. I think that's great advice. And you're exactly right about this growing amount of wealth in the hands of women. We know that as this somewhere between $30 and $60 trillion changes hands between now and 2030, a large portion of that will be in the hands of women. We hear from them all the time, as you know, Miriam, on the broadcast. So I'm delighted we can give them some help and encouragement today. I know we've got a lot of ground to cover, so let's dive in. What's the first habit of wise women managing money?
Well, we acknowledge that all we have is God's on loan to us to steward. So some people listening may say, well, I have a 401k or I have an IRA. Is that what we're talking about, those investments? Well, the word is all we have. So in other words, our income, are we spending it wisely or is it a bunch of it going to credit card debt? What about housing? Are we taking care of it, keeping it in good repair? Car or transportation, making wise choices, even wardrobe. So we think of it's all God's, but let's realize that word all means everything, every bit of it. So it's the big stuff and the small stuff and everything in between.
You're exactly right. And that leads us to number 2, which is around taking responsibility to know our finances. Why is that important for wise women managing money?
Well, we pay attention to, you know, things that need repair. We pay attention to the things that we're lacking we need to get. We should spend more time than ever on knowing our finances. And I simplify the 8 to 4, know it, own it, like it, or change it. We write it down. And Bob and I did paper and pencil. My family members do spreadsheets in their marriages. But you keep a record of it. And we can't be distracted by saying, oh, my teenagers need too much stuff, or my parents didn't teach us this. It is our responsibility. We're going to stand before God alone. And the most important topic is love. How did we love others? But the second most important topic in the Bible is our stuff.
Yes, that's exactly right. Well, these are two key points to get us started. And on that second one around taking responsibility for our finances, you don't have to go it alone. We're here to help you at Faith and Finance. There's Widow Connection, your local church, and so many other resources. So get some help along the way. We're joined today by Miriam Neff. She's the founder and president of Widow Connection. We're talking about the 8 habits of wise women managing money. Back with much more just around the corner. Stick around.
For your walk with Jesus, I'm David Wolin with Haven Today, inviting you to anchor your day in God's Word.
How much can a young person do? Some younger generations have doubted their potential, but today's youth, many of them, they believe they can make a change and they want to see a change in the world. How might God use today's young believers? We shouldn't underestimate what He may do. Think of Esther. She was a young teenage girl when she became queen, but God placed her in that position for a purpose. And when the Jews faced destruction, she pleaded with King Xerxes and begged him to put an end to the evil plan of Haman, which he had devised against the Jews. And through a teenager's courage, God saved an entire people. Never underestimate how the Lord can use a young person who's trusting in Him. Get more daily encouragement with Anchor Devotional. Visit getanchor.com.
Faith and Finance is grateful for support from Sound Mind Investing. If you have money in an investment account, you know sometimes the stock market can seem like a roller coaster. But it's possible to enjoy both profit and peace of mind as a do-it-yourself investor, no matter what's happening in the market. A short video webinar about that is available at soundmindinvesting.org. Financial wisdom for living well. Soundmindinvesting.org.
Fostering and adoption is not a band-aid for infertility.
Nope,
like it
is
a calling, and God can change the desire of your heart and make that so rewarding. It's the most beautiful, selfless thing. It's pure religion, but it's not a fix to I desire biological child. God has to deal with that in your heart separately.
Hannah's Heart, encouraging couples through infertility and miscarriage. Saturdays, 4 a.m. Central on AFR or on the AFR app.
We're grateful for support from Movement Mortgage, who provides residential home loans in all 50 states. Guided by a mission to love and value people and a goal to redefine the mortgage process, Movement seeks to help others achieve their financial goals. You can find out more at movement.com/faith. Movement Mortgage LLC supports Equal Housing Opportunity, NMLS number 39179. For licensing information, please visit nmlsconsumeraccess.org.
We're grateful for support from Timothy Plan. For more than 30 years, they've served clients on a biblically responsible journey to invest in a way that honors God and gives dignity to people's lives. More information is at timothyplan.com. The investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses are contained in the prospectus and summary prospectus available at timothyplan.com. Mutual funds distributed by Timothy Partners LTD and ETFs distributed by Foreside Fund Services LLC.
I'm so grateful to have you with us today on Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. It's a pleasure to welcome back to the broadcast today Miriam Neff. She's a frequent contributor here. She's the founder and president of Widow Connection, a ministry dedicated to helping women overcome and thrive after the loss of a husband. She's also the co-author with her daughter, Valerie Neff Hogan, of Wise Women Managing Money. And today we're talking about the 8 habits of wise women who've been thrust into this role of managing money. As Miriam said just before the break, more than 50% of wealth in the hands of women today, and that number is clearly growing. She said habit number one is that we have to acknowledge all we have is God's on loan to us as a steward. That's a high calling. And then secondly, it's important for wise women managing money to take responsibility for knowing their finances, even if they've not spent a lot of time in that area, and they can get help. Miriam, what's the next habit of wise women managing money?
The next one is we create a spending plan based on our income and values. And I just want to say, Rob, this is hard because our culture gets it backwards. They say, if you want it, own it. You want that bigger house, stretch, get as big a mortgage as you can, hope your income will go up to cover it and your bills will not go up. And just if you want those extra items of clothing, put it on the credit card. Maybe you'll be able to pay for it later. That's what the culture says.
That's right.
And that's based on comparisons and wanting more. Biblically, our contentment is in the Lord. That's where our value is. That's, we believe it's all His and we want to do it well. So we do not let the culture push us to make foolish choices.
That's so helpful because we've got to start with our income. But what's even bigger than that is the second piece that you talked about, and that is our values. What does it look like for wise women managing money to take a values inventory, Miriam, so that they know their values and they can apply that to their investment decisions?
Well, we have a chart for that in our book, and we have a chart that shows what recommendations there are for percentages that go to housing and all of that kind of thing. But as Christ followers, the first big piece of that pie to go out is to give to God. It's not really giving to Him. It's just acknowledging and dedicating to a biblical future.
Yes.
I mean, eternity is forever. That's where we want to invest first. So that's where the values come in. So it's a good chart for you to look at in our book.
Yeah, very good. And that's well said. All right. This next habit speaks to the quote that Larry Burkett would often say, and that is that every spending decision is a spiritual decision. What do you want to tell us about our hearts related to money management?
Well, you started with the scripture, where your treasure is, there will your heart be. What do you look at first thing in the morning? Do you look at where the markets are? Mm. Do you look at Facebook, or is our face in the Bible first? And if you want to know the status of one's heart, look at the calendar, the checkbook, the credit card. It's staring right at us because that's our behavior. And that's where earlier I said, know it, own it, like it, or change it. If you don't like what's staring back at you, if you say, God isn't pleased with this, this has me burning up money with credit card debt, then you change it. And I'm not saying if it's big steps you need to take, you start out successfully right out of the gate, but you start with little steps and you get stewarding it responsibly. God notices and then He helps us. When He sees you put your foot in the water, He knows how to part the waters.
That is so good and so helpful. All right, I think we're up to habit number five, Miriam, and this one has to do with excuses. What do you have for us here?
Well, you can say, well, my spouse is a big spender, or my teenagers need to have the same kind of smartphones as their friends, or, oh, I wasn't feeling so good, I was discouraged, so I'm going to do a little retail therapy.
Yes.
Hello, that is not, that's called retail sickness.
So, yes.
And making excuses or saying it's somebody else, or, I mean, it's really hard, and I'm talking to single parents and people who have some real struggles, it's really hard not to be pushed by emotion or fear, like the Matthew 25 story that got one talent. He was captivated by fear and didn't earn anything with that one talent. Mm. So getting the emotions in line, we have a chapter on that, but we want to make sure that we own it ourselves. It's about what we're doing with what's entrusted to us.
Yes, that's exactly right. And that really leads right into this sixth wise habit, which has to do with taking personal responsibility. Tell us about that.
Well, we don't. Here's some temptations. Oh, as a parent, we may decide, oh, we need to kind of hand out stuff to our kids, or especially in divorce situations, to kind of earn favor of our kids. Handing out to keep a relationship, or hoarding something to fill a void. These are financial actions that we have to take personal responsibility. We can't say, well, our circumstances made us do that. Mm. No, we're Christ followers. We know our why. We want to honor Him, and He blesses us. And again, I can just promise anyone listening, when you take that first small step to say, God, I want to honor you with my finances, he steps in and does some amazing things.
Yes, he sure does. And I'm so glad you have this next one on the list of habits, because this is not about setting it and forgetting it, is it?
Oh, absolutely not. Think of what's happening today with inflation. If you had a budget a year ago, today it would be busted.
Yeah, that's
and
right.
I'm saying that from my location, but it's happening all over our country. And one of the principles is you have 3 to 6 months savings set aside available for emergencies. Well, anymore, they say the only things you can count on are death and taxes. Well, now I'm thinking you can also count on change, and you can also count on something happening. The car that breaks down, the thermostat that doesn't work. I mean, these things are guaranteed to happen. We just don't know when. So that's why we have to keep revisiting. With inflation, you pare down things so that you make sure you have that 3 to 6 month reserve. It's just vital.
Yes, it sure is. Well, we've saved the best one for last. We have about a minute left. I know this one is really near and dear to your heart, and it has to do with investing for kingdom purposes. Tell us about the eighth habit.
Well, I just have to say, for me, it's personal. I invest in global projects in poor areas, and widows learn a saleable skill, and then they know that they were able to learn that because God loved this one woman. So that's an investment in eternity. Now, does everybody do it that way? No, and I'm not saying I'm a good, great example, but pick that thing that you know is going to be a blessing for kingdom purposes. And that's the thing that makes it worth buying your sweats at Walmart's or at the resale shop. Have some accountability partners. Not that you tell them all the details, but tell them your goals and help them, encourage them. Our book has questions and discussion at the end of each chapter. Have a few friends meet together. Hold each other accountable so you're not feeling you're kind of alone in the struggle.
This is so good. We've, of course, just scratched the surface. So, folks, you're going to have to pick up a copy of this book because there's much more behind all of these. It's called Wise Women Managing Money, and it's from Miriam Neff and Valerie Neff Hogan. Miriam, thanks for stopping by. We're going to have you back real soon.
Thanks, Rob. Sure enjoyed it. God bless you.
God bless you as well. That's Miriam Neff, founder and president of Widow Connection. We'll be right back with much more. Stick around.
The loss of a child through abortion, miscarriage, or stillbirth affects the emotional health of families. Feelings of anger, sadness, and regret can be overwhelming. There is hope and healing in the aftermath of a reproductive loss. Call the International Helpline at 866-482-LIFE to talk with someone who has been where you are and healed to help others. Your call is confidential. 866-482-LIFE.
We're grateful for support from Guidestone, whose diversified suite of investment solutions align with Christian values to create positive change in the world. More information is available at GuidestoneFunds.com/faith. Investing involves risk, including potential loss of principal. Carefully consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of Guidestone Funds before investing. They're distributed by Foresight Funds Distributors, LLC, which is not an advisory affiliate, a registered investment advisor, nor do they provide investment advice.
What we believe about the Bible is based on what we believe about its source.
The God Who Speaks, the award-winning documentary from the American Family Association, is now available in a special limited edition DVD set. This release includes a Sunday school curriculum and 2 hours of additional footage. Go to thegodwhospeaks.org to get your copy today. thegodwhospeaks.org.
Do you feel like your hands are tied with debt, preventing you from serving God? If you have credit card debt, Christian credit counselors can help. Through our debt management program, we can get you out of credit card debt about 80% faster while honoring your debt in full. For more information on how Christian credit counselors can help, visit ChristianCreditCounselors.org. That's ChristianCreditCounselors.org. Or call 800-557-1985. 800-557-1985.
Rob West of Faith and Finance. I'd like to take a moment to ask you to consider investing in the ministry that you know as American Family Association. One way you can support AFA's efforts is through your estate planning. You can shore up permanent income for your retirement years while supporting the culture-transforming work of the American Family Association. Call 800-326-4543, extension 345, or visit afafoundation.net.
You're young. You don't go to the doctor that often, yet health insurance is still so expensive. If your health insurance costs too much, maybe you should switch to an affordable alternative. Take charge of your healthcare with Christian Healthcare Ministries. CHM offers programs starting under $100 per month. Check off the affordable box on your list and get back to what you really love, running your business or caring for your kids, and have peace of mind while doing it. Visit chministries.org/faithfi to enroll today.
Great to have you with us today on Faith and Finance here on American Family Radio. I'm Rob West. Boy, great to have Miriam Neff here. She is such a blessing. I'll tell you, if you would like to know more about her ministry, I would really encourage you to check out Widow Connection. It's a great resource. If you find yourself in that position and you're just wondering, how do I kind of make the next step? And what does that look like? Well, Widow Connection is just a great ministry. You'll find it on the web, and the resources there are just so good. It's at widowconnection.org. And then this book, Wise Women Managing Money, I think could be a real blessing to you as well. Miriam wrote it after her husband Bob passed away. She found herself thrust into that role of money manager and just somewhat lost, and she purposed herself to really help others in that situation. And this book is really all about that. Wise Women Managing Money. You can pick it up wherever you buy books. We're looking forward to taking your calls and questions today on anything financial. The number to call, 800-525-7000. We can go any direction you want. Maybe you're struggling with that spending plan. I realize it's harder than ever to stay on budget. Maybe you're trying to think about the next season of life. What does retirement look like? Have I saved enough? What will I do in that season of life? Let's talk about that. Maybe it's trying to get out of debt. Maybe you're really in a place of struggling right now. I'd love to be an encouragement to you and help you create that path forward. Whatever it is, give us a call right now. We've got lines open and we're ready for you. 800-525-7000. That's 800-525-7000. We're going to dive in today. We'll begin in Texas. Hi, Ann. You'll be our first caller. Go ahead.
Hey, Ann. How's it going?
Doing great. Thanks for your call.
Love your show. Yeah, question was for kids in college and how much you support them financially. Obviously this is a Christian talk show. So we'll speak for my eldest daughter. She loves Jesus, and yeah, we are blessed to completely support her. But do we, or should we? Those are my questions.
Yes. Well, it's a great question. And first of all, let me just affirm you, because I love this idea that you have saved enough. You're in a position to help her fully if you want to. You can cover the cost of college. It sounds like you perhaps could even do a little bit more than that and cover some of the other ancillary expenses in that season of life. That means you've prioritized living modestly and saving diligently. So well done. The other thing is just a blessing as a dad. I'm just overwhelmed at times at God's grace that I've got four kids and they all love Jesus. And listen, but by the grace of God, because I know there's probably some listening who, you know, they raise their kids in a Christian home and, you know, right now they're walking away from the Lord. And that's a really difficult season. But what a blessing for you to know that she loves the Lord. And boy, that is incredible. Now, I also really like that you're thinking about, you know, what is the best way to set her up for success? Because, you know, giving 100% doesn't mean that you're necessarily setting her up for success. Now, is it wrong to go ahead and just cover the cost of college? No, I think that could be a perfectly appropriate way to go. But, you know, should you allow her to have some stake in this, take on some responsibility? I like that too, because I think that's going to allow her to develop some of the disciplines and rhythms, that will, you know, really serve her well beyond college. And so I think there's a host of issues you need to look at. One is just making a matter of prayer. You and your husband just ask the Lord to give you wisdom, because this is one of those where you're going to use discernment. There's not a right or wrong. I think number two, you need to look at the child and say, okay, remember in Ron Blue's book, Splitting Heirs, he says, if we love our children equally, we will treat them uniquely. And so it doesn't mean we always have to do the same for every one of our kids if you have more than one child, but you may decide to. But I think you do need to think about her. Where is she at? How has she demonstrated maturity, not only spiritually, but also financially? And what role could her having a part in getting a summer job, you know, between her freshman and sophomore year, or between high school and college, have in helping to develop some skills for her? You know, what about getting a, you know, a part-time job on campus now or in the future? I mean, I was a resident assistant my senior year and covered all of my room and board, and that was a great experience. And I was able to help my parents shoulder some of that, you know, financial load. And I think I, you know, I learned several things in the process and really just enjoyed that experience. So I think there's that side of it, being able to start to manage her own money and, you know, understand the sacrifice of giving. And it hits a little different when it's your money versus money that mom and dad have given you. And so that's a good muscle to start to exercise. But at the same time, I know you probably want her to focus on, you know, why she's there, which is getting good grades and, you know, hopefully getting involved in some campus ministries and just having an amazing season of life, which you and I know is unlike anything else we will ever experience once we get to true adulthood. And so you all may decide, you know what, we don't want her to have to focus on school and community and be running off to a, you know, 20-hour-a-week job. And so we have the ability God has provided. And so, you know, we're going to shoulder, you know, the vast majority of that just so she can be all in at school. And I don't think that's a bad thing. And I think maybe during some of those other seasons, maybe it's, you know, getting an internship that is going to springboard her into what she's ultimately wanting to do that's paid. You know, my son, who's an accounting major at UGA, is blessed to get an internship with Chick-fil-A at their headquarters this summer. It's a paid internship, but it's something that's going to set him up for ultimately what he wants to do. So I think there are ways to go about this that accomplish all of these goals. I think as you all pray through it, you just need to decide what is most important to us with regard to her formation financially and spiritually, and what you're hoping for her in this season. And then I think we use the money as a tool to accomplish that. And you may decide, well, what's really important is that she's fully present in college. And so we're going to cover, you know, the vast majority of that. But we also think it's important that she's ready to get a job when she gets out. So we're going to encourage her to get a paid internship. But maybe it's not her freshman year. Maybe it's, you know, in between sophomore and junior or junior and senior. Does that make sense?
Rob, you have been so helpful. I heard that we could call in yesterday, and I didn't have my phone in the car, and I was like, no, I can't call, but I was able to today. They opened it back up, so I'm so thankful. And
that's awesome. So well, I'm so glad. Listen, may the Lord bless you. Thanks for your kind remarks about the program. I got to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
In rural Malawi, baby Esther was taken in by her grandparents when her mother died. Resources were scarce, and Esther suffered from malnutrition for years until God transformed her life. Today, through Cross International, Esther receives nutritious meals, drinks clean water, and is taught about the hope found only in Jesus. But other children are still waiting. Make an eternal impact on a child now with a $62 gift at crossinternational.org/faith.
This weekend on The Stan Radio, best-selling author Randy Alcorn talks about heaven and what life will be like after the resurrection.
We go directly into the presence of God when we die. But that too is not the future heaven or the eternal heaven. It's the pre-resurrection heaven.
The Stan Radio, Saturdays at 4 and Sundays at 8 p.m. Central on American Family Radio.
Are you a financial advisor or CPA seeking to build your practice on biblical wisdom? Not only does the Certified Kingdom Advisor education provide you with deep biblical insights, the CKA designation sets you apart. Each year, almost 50,000 people search for a Christian financial advisor. Join our community and share your expertise with clients looking for someone who shares their faith and values. Find more information at kingdomadvisors.com/getcertified.
Are you looking for a financial professional who aligns with your biblical values? Certified Kingdom Advisors are trusted financial, legal, or accounting professionals who have completed a rigorous certification program to ensure they provide biblically wise financial advice as part of their practice. You can find a local CKA professional in your area by going to faithfi.com and clicking Find a CKA.
The American Family Association's mission is to inform, equip, and activate individuals to strengthen the moral foundations of our culture. We also support the church. Our goal is to be a leading organization in biblical worldview training for cultural transformation. We believe that our ministry, as well as everything in the heavens and on earth, belongs to God, and our role is that of a trusted manager.
Thank you for standing with the American Family Association.
Faith and Finance is grateful for support from Sound Mind Investing. For more than 30 years, they've offered financial wisdom for living well. SMI provides step-by-step guidance for do-it-yourself investors, from those just getting started to those getting ready for retirement. More information, including a short video webinar on profit and peace of mind no matter what's happening in the market, is available at soundmindinvesting.org.
This is American Family Radio, a listener-supported ministry of the American Family Association.
Hey, great to have you with us today on Faith and Finance here on American Family Radio. I'm Rob West. Our goal each day to be an encouragement to you, to be hopeful, to be theologically sound, but also wise in terms of how we help you manage God's money, recognizing it all belongs to Him. And money is one of the key ways that God shapes our spiritual journey. Think about it. It's that tangible daily expression of what's important to you. And so we want to align our spending, our handling of God's money with God's heart that we see in Scripture and make sure we're using it as a tool. It's not an end. It's a means to an end to accomplish God's purposes. Hey, we're taking your calls and questions today. We've got some great questions holding, but we've got room for you. If you have a question, something going on in your financial life today, call right now. 800-525-7000. That's 800-525-7000. Let's go to Louisiana. Hi, William. I understand you have a comment. Go right ahead, sir.
Yes, can you hear me okay?
Yeah, it's a little noisy, but I think we got you. Go ahead.
Okay, I have a comment to make about credit cards.
Okay.
When I was in the Navy, no one would let you have a credit card for anything, not even a gas card. So I got used to not using credit cards. I'm 76 years old, and I've never carried a balance on a credit card in my life.
Yes, sir.
However, I know that I spend money because I can put it on a credit card that I would not otherwise spend. And Dave Ramsey pointed this out.
Yeah.
And I don't know what it is, but, you know, this is just a warning to be aware that I don't know what it is about a credit card.
Yeah. Well, I think you're exactly right, William. And here's what I think it is. It's the psychological detachment. Because when you use cash, you feel the loss of the money more, whereas swiping a credit card, a piece of plastic, is painless, and it's detached from that feeling. There's also the delayed payment effect. Since you don't see the money leaving your account immediately, you're less conscious of the expense. So I think you're exactly right. People are more willing to spend or even splurge when using a credit card. There's been a variety of studies on this. I mean, the data that I've seen most consistently when they've studied this is that people will spend up to 30% more when they use plastic versus cash. There's also some data cited from McDonald's. I've never been able to pinpoint the actual study or source data, so take this with a grain of salt. But the research indicates, at least what I've read, is that the average ticket size at McDonald's was 56% higher when customers use credit cards instead of cash. I mean, that's a big deal because we're spending a lot more. So I think you're exactly right. I think this is a really important point to call out. So what do we do with it? Well, there certainly are conveniences of paying with plastic, so long as we only use them for budgeted items and we're paying them off in full. There's the convenience of not having to carry the cash. There's the convenience of not worrying about losing it or somebody taking it. The nice thing about the credit card versus the debit card even is that if somebody compromises your account, you're not out the money. You just dispute it. But I will say, William, that Larry Burkett, the late Larry Burkett, that was this program traces its roots back to Larry. In a program called Money Matters, Larry popularized the physical envelope system of managing money, which does exactly what you're describing, where literally Larry would say, for those discretionary items where you're not sending a rent or a mortgage check every month, and you really don't need to track it, but for eating out and for clothing and for entertainment and, those things that do change and they are truly discretionary, what if you were to cash your paycheck and fund envelopes with literal cash and then take that envelope with you? I was talking to somebody just this week who's converting from the physical envelope system over to the FaithFi app, where we use a digital envelope system. But he and his wife emptied out all of their envelopes. They had $25,000 in all of their envelopes. They've been doing it for decades. So I think you make a great point. And I'm not someone who says that we should never use credit cards, because I think as long as we can use them for budgeted expenses and pay them off, they're very convenient, and I do like the rewards. But I think we have to recognize if we find ourselves psychologically, unconsciously spending more, then maybe we need to abandon it and use the cash. What are your thoughts?
I agree. And Larry Burkett said one other thing. He said, if you have an impulse buy,
yeah,
he says, say, I'll come back later and do it. Don't do it then. And 90% of the time, you won't do it, especially with tools. And I try to follow Larry Burkett on that, because a lot of times I want to buy a tool or something. I say, I'll wait, and next time I'll get it. And 90% of the time, I won't get it.
Yeah, that's good. You've probably got a neighbor that has it that you can borrow it and not have to borrow it, buy it all together. Yeah, that's the 30-day rule. And so whether it's 2 weeks or 30 days, you make a great point, William. I love that. You're offering some really practical advice here. Just to kind of put a little more finer point on that, what I would do is set a threshold. Hey, anytime I'm spending over X dollars, maybe it's $100, maybe it's $200, I'm not going to buy it without taking 2 weeks or 30 days to make sure I really need it. And I think your point is well taken, that perhaps in most cases you'll find that you actually didn't need it in the first place. Hey, William, call anytime. You're full of great sage advice, and we welcome that on this program. Thanks for being on the show today. God bless you, sir. Let's go to Alabama. Milton, how can I serve you?
Hey, yes, good morning. Thank you. Yes, I'm about to sell a home. And I wonder, since I'm moving to a different city, and I might wait a little before I buy the next one, what would be the best way to use the money from the equity and the down payment that I put on the home?
Yeah. Meaning just where do you put it in order to earn some interest on it, but keep it safe? Is that your question?
Yes. And I don't know if the equity from the home, the taxes that I might be getting on, if I can avoid getting taxes.
Yeah, it's a good question. So let's tackle both sides of that question, because these are very important. First of all, if you're going to have to pay taxes on the sale of a home, it's because you have a capital gain and you haven't lived in the home for 2 out of the last 5 years. So let's start there. What do you think you're going to sell it for?
Well, I think the market price is around like between 170 and 190.
Okay, let's call it one. Let's call it 190.
270 and 290. Yeah.
Let's call it 290. What did you pay for it?
150, roughly.
Have you lived there 2 out of the last 5 years?
It hasn't been 2 years yet.
It hasn't been 2 years. Will you be there 2 years by the time you sell it?
No, I don't think so, because it'll be 2 years in August, and I'm going to start selling it soon. So okay. It might not be complete.
Okay. So you just need to know that if you don't stay 2 years, you're not going to be able to exclude all of the capital gains. So if you sell it for $290 and you paid $150 for it, you're going to have $140,000 in capital gains. Okay. Now, the way to reduce that is if you made any major improvements to the property that improved the value. Did you do that?
No, not any major improvements. The house had the improvement when I bought it. So I bought it for $250, and hopefully I can sell it for at least $270.
Okay. Oh, you didn't buy it for $150. You bought it for $250?
That's correct.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so then you're only talking about $40,000 in capital gains if you sell it for $290. All right, let's do this. I want to finish this on the other side of the break. We'll talk about how much tax you'll potentially owe, and then we'll talk about where to put the money in the meantime. We'll be right back.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
You look at three of the four justices there in Colorado that voted to remove him from the ballot. They all came from Ivy League schools, schools that had been created as divinity schools. What a picture of the apostasy in America when it comes to the church.
Stay informed with Tony Perkins and his guests on Washington Watch, weekdays at 4 p.m. Central on AFR, or catch up anytime with the podcast at AFR.net.
Do you want to know God? Do you want to see God? Do you want to walk with God? That motivation will drive purity into your soul and impurity away. You will not want anything to get in that process.
Dr. David Jeremiah continues his series, How to Be Happy According to Jesus, next time on Turning Point.
5:30 a.m. and 7 p.m. Central on American Family Radio.
We are grateful for support from Crossmark Global Investments. They are a faith-based firm with a goal of offering values-based investments to help align financial choices and faith, ensuring a portfolio that reflects what matters most. Crossmark does this through investment solutions that span the capital market spectrum, from large cap to small cap strategies, including equity, fixed income, and balanced strategies. They are led by industry veteran Bob Dahl, CFA, a regular guest on the Faith and Finance program. More information is available at crossmarkglobal.com.
Have you ever wondered where your money goes when you deposit it in a bank? Christian Community Credit Union believes in helping advance God's kingdom through everyday financial transactions. For over 67 years, they have provided values-aligned banking solutions to thousands of Christians and ministries. Consider Christian Community Credit Union as your banking institution by visiting joinchristiancommunity.com. Membership eligibility required. Each account is insured up to $250,000. This institution is not federally insured.
Great to have you with us today on Faith and Finance here on American Family Radio. I'm Rob West. Coming up in just a moment here in our final segment today, Jerry Boyer, Walker Wildman stop by with a market update. We'll also find out what AFA Action's latest work is related to corporate engagement as shareholders of some of the biggest corporations here in the United States. We've been talking to Milton. Before the break, he shared with us that he's selling his home. He's going to be moving to a different city. He's lived in the home less than 2 years and will not have been there 2 years prior to the sale. He bought it for about $250,000, believes he'll sell it for somewhere between $270,000 and $290,000. So, Milton, I was sharing that you perhaps will have that long-term capital gain because you've held it more than a year, and so you'll pay the long-term capital gains rates. If you were to sell it for a full $290,000, and you know you could reduce the expenses that you had related to the sale, but whatever that final profit number was would be subject to capital gains. If you're married filing jointly for 2025, if you have combined income, including the gain on the property, plus all of your other income, if that's over $96,000, then you'd pay 15% on that. So let's say it ends up being $35,000, $35,000, times 15%, you're talking about $5,000 roughly. So just be aware of that and make sure you factor that in. Now, where do you put the money? Well, the taxes you're going to pay, to your question, are not going to have anything to do with what you do with the money after. You could give it away. You could invest it. You could put it in savings. You could buy a new home. That doesn't affect the tax that you'll pay. You're going to pay the capital gains regardless. So just make sure you set aside the roughly $5,000 or whatever that gain ends up being times 15%. So you're ready for that. Now, what should you do with it? Well, given that you're saying you want to buy a home within the next 1 to 2 years in your new city, then I would put it in just a high-yield savings account with FDIC insurance. And they're still high-yield savings accounts paying 4.5% right now. It's probably going to be an online bank. I'd go to bankrate.com, look for something that's 4.5 or 5-star rated with FDIC insurance. And let's say that money, you know, sits there. If you don't have a mortgage, and we're talking, you know, $275,000, let's say, if that sits there for a year, you'll make another $12,000. Now, that'll be taxable, but that's a nice, you know, bit of interest that you'll have, roughly. And then, you know, you'll be ready to buy that next house. Is that helpful?
Yeah, that's pretty good. So I will have to pay taxes even in the down payment that I put in the home?
No, you'll pay the tax on the sale of the property as a capital gain, and then that's after tax money. That you're, it's not going to be taxable again unless you earn interest on it. You'll pay tax on the interest, but it will not be taxable when you put it down on your next home. Okay.
I'll do that then. Yeah.
All right. God bless you, sir. We appreciate your call today. Thanks for being on the program. Well, folks, here in our final segment today, at the end of the week, we always look forward to having Jerry Boyer with us, our resident economist, and Walker Wildman from the American Family Association. You know him well. He joins us in this segment as well. Jerry, let's start with you and the economy. We'll begin with inflation. We've got, I guess, the Fed's favorite reading out related to personal consumption. It pretty much came in line. Is that right?
Yeah, they expected about 2.6% inflation, and they got about 2.6% inflation. And I think the markets have convinced themselves that that's the Fed's target. The Fed's target, they said, was 2 to 2.5% over the long run. So they haven't really, you know, they haven't really hit. I mean, if they get one good month, you know, that's not really hitting their target. But markets are basically reacting as though, okay, the Fed doesn't have to fight inflation now, so they're probably going to do a little bit of monetary creation at the next meeting, which is why markets responded up a little bit to that today. But of course, the general trend in markets has been down.
Yeah,
and it's tariff driven. The Trump economic agenda of tax cuts and deregulation is great. Markets love it. Markets love Doge. Markets are not acting as though Elon Musk's promise of $2 trillion in savings is true. Mr. Musk does have a history of over-promising and under-delivering in every area of his life. I mean, he's a showman. But they like it. They just don't believe the hype about it. But markets do not like these tariffs. And global markets are down. So China's down more than us. So if the idea is that we're both worse off, but they're more worse off than us, great. If that's the definition of winning, then we're winning. My idea would be we win, they lose, and that our markets are up, and they're not. And basically, markets have given up all the gains since the Trump election.
Yeah.
And that's because the Trump election was seen as the victory of supply-side economics, basically the Reagan formula. And what's coming out of the Twitter account in Truth Social has been tariffs first. We'll get around to the regular tax cuts later. So tax hikes first, tax cuts later. And that markets are responding accordingly. Inflation expectations have been rising for a few weeks now. And that's because tariffs are a tax on goods, and there's just an increase on the price. Why is gasoline more expensive in California than other places? Because they tax it. So goods that come from China, which is an enemy, Mexico and Canada, which aren't, goods that come from them are going to be higher price. And that means there's less competition. So even when we buy American goods, they'll be higher priced too, because there'll be less competition from Canada and Mexico. So inflation expectations are rising. I think the president won largely on an anti-inflation blowback.
Yeah.
I would not be messing around with this stuff. I would stick to the main stuff. Tax cuts, deregulation, growth.
Yeah. Obviously, he gets pressed on this every opportunity the press has. And his consistent answer is, well, the countries are going to pay it and we're going to get rich as a result. What? Help us understand what he means when he says that, because that's really not the way it works, right?
No, it isn't the way it works. Taxes are always, in the end, paid by consumers. And we, as conservatives, we understand that. When you raise taxes on business, what do we say? Well, it's not really a business tax. It flows through to the consumer. So I don't understand. That law of economics doesn't change if the business is in Vancouver, yeah, as opposed to Pennsylvania. It's still the same rule. The taxes flow through to the consumer. So no, they're not paying it. We're paying it. And so I just don't think that argument makes sense. And we're going to get rich. I don't understand that argument either, because he's talking about tax revenues. So I'm not trying to make the government rich. And that's not as my goal as an economist isn't to make the government have more tax revenues. It's to make us rich. And counting tax hikes as a win, because all that money will be flowing in. Yeah, it'll be flowing into the government, not flowing into us. I don't see how that's a win. And in his press conference yesterday with Macron, he said, well, we have zero inflation. Well, wait a minute. You've been in office for a month and a half, and your tariffs haven't actually happened yet. So no, you're right. The tariffs have not caused inflation yet because you're imposing them this week. It's going to take a little time. So, and this makes it sound like I'm really, really anti-Trump. I'm not at all.
Yeah.
I just want the pro-business one, not the anti-trade one.
No, I hear you in that, and I couldn't agree more. One more thought, and then we'll get to corporate engagement. Obviously, a lot moving, right? I mean, every day there's incredible pace here. But what Lutnick and Bessent are working on is just pretty amazing. I mean, this rare earth deal with Ukraine, the sovereign wealth fund for the first time, the $5 million gold card. I mean, what are your thoughts on all these pieces and parts?
Yeah, I mean, I want to know what the Sovereign Wealth Fund is going to do, right? Yeah. Because the executive order is a bit vague on this. So it can be a really good thing if it's replaced. It basically, a Sovereign Wealth Fund could just be another government, slush fund. Or it could be a way to get around government regulations when it comes to procurement. So it could be a way to build infrastructure. But since it's outside of the federal government, it doesn't have all the red tape. If it's that, love that. And I really love the Ukraine deal. I know that people think, well, it makes us look greedy or whatever. America's not the Messiah. It's not our job to go around the world. We're not Superman righting every wrong. Yeah. We put a lot of money into Ukraine. Historically, statesmanship has had an element that's transactional. Yeah. We're following our interests. We need rare earths. You have rare earths. You're up against Russia, which is a superpower. We're a superpower. We can help you. Can we do something that's in your interest and in our interest? Under the Bush Freedom Agenda, we seem to be just following their interest, but not ours.
Yeah.
Just going around there, making democracy or thinking we could make democracy happen. So I love the idea. And I think Ukraine's foolish for dragging their feet on it, because American capital flowing into that could make Ukraine a rich nation.
Yeah,
it doesn't have to be a poor nation.
It sounds it's a done deal as of today. Let me get Walker in before we run out of time. Walker, so glad to have you. I know you've been traveling the globe lately. Give us an update on some of what you've been working on in the corporate engagement space.
Yeah, two things. I presented before Apple shareholders this week on our measure aimed at getting Apple to look further into why they're not protecting minors on their devices, including scanning for child sexual abuse material. Yeah. And that got more votes than we thought it would, which was a good sign. We've still got a long ways to go to really build momentum, but we're going to keep we're eligible to bring the proposal back next year, so we're going to take a look at that. What I wanted to point out was that this is the first time that I'm aware of in a long time, and Jerry knows more about the voting record here, that there were all conservative proposals on the ballot with Apple.
Wow.
So four of four proposals on the ballot at this meeting were conservative in nature. So conservatives are now dominating shareholder engagement at the corporate level.
Wow.
And AFA's proposal got 9%, which is a record for anything from our team.
That's incredible. Well, probably. Listen, this is in large part, I don't want to overstate this, but I absolutely believe this. This is in large part due to you two gentlemen. AFA went first among all the Christian ministries in this area. And Jerry, you've been leading the charge for now years, getting Christians back in this conversation around Christian values in the boardroom. And it's making a real impact. Gentlemen, so thankful for you. We appreciate you being here today. That's Jerry Boyer and Walker Wildman. That's going to do it for us. Big thanks to my team today, Sandy Dickinson, Devin Patrick, Jim Henry, and everybody here at FaithFi. Have a great weekend. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.